welcome to this week's episode of Ukraine Calling. I'm Marta Dychok for Hromadske Radio in Kyiv. We're reviving our news section this week and have an interview that film buffs will really enjoy. It's about cinema in Ukraine. And, of course, a new song for you. But first, the news. More U.S. aid. The U.S. Senate passed a $716 billion defense policy bill on Wednesday, August the 1st. The Senate voted 87-10, supporting the John S. McCain National Defense Authorization Act. Since it cleared the House of Representatives, the bill now goes to President Trump, who is expected to sign it into law. Among other things, the bill authorizes an additional $250 million for armaments and aid to Ukraine. Manafort in the news, again. This week, we learned that Paul Manafort, President Donald Trump's one-time campaign chairman, earned more than $60 million as a political consultant in Ukraine. This was disclosed by U.S. Special Counsel Robert Mueller on the eve of Manafort's criminal trial. Manafort's lawyers are trying to prevent jurors from seeing the 51 exhibits that detail his work in Ukraine, where he advised former President Viktor Yanukovych, his party of regions, and its successor, the opposition bloc. Meanwhile, ex-President Yanukovych's trial continues. On the 31st of July, the Obolensky District Court continued proceedings in the case of Ukraine's ex-president Viktor Yanukovych. As before, there were disputes between the prosecutor and the defense. Yanukovych's attorneys tried to disrupt proceedings, and they all announced that they have left the case. As a result, court adjourned until August the 16th. Ukraine marks 1,030 years of Christianity. Ukrainian President Poroshenko joined thousands on the streets of Kyiv on Saturday, July the 28th. Ukraine was marking its 1,030th anniversary of Christianity. The president used the occasion to further his aim to secure independence for Ukrainian Orthodox Church from Russia. Poroshenko wants to establish a so-called National Autocephalous Church. He said, quote, "Autocephaly is the issue of our independence. This is an issue of our national security. This is an issue of world politics." Representatives of the Ecumenical Patriarch Bartholomew, the global spiritual leader of Orthodox Christians, boosted Poroshenko's hopes of securing approval for an autocephalous church. His representative, Metropolitan Emmanuel, came to Kyiv for the celebrations where he said, "The Ecumenical Patriarch cannot remain blind and deaf to the appeals that have been repeated for more than a quarter of a century." The Moscow Patriarchate, as well as the Kremlin, opposed Poroshenko's proposal. Economic news. The European Bank for Reconstruction and Development is considering a $100 million loan to Ukraine. It would go to the state energy firm Naftogaz to buy natural gas for the winter. The decision is expected in early September. Ukraine used to meet its gas needs by importing from Russia. That ended in 2015. Ukraine now imports its gas from Europe. The Russian nationalist biker gang with close ties to President Vladimir Putin set up a base in Slovakia. This move alarmed the local government. Slovak President Andriy Kiska warned that the Night Wolves, who supported Russian troops during the annexation of Crimea in 2014, are a security risk to NATO and the EU. Politics of sport. Elina Svitolina, famous Ukrainian tennis player, refused to take part in the Moscow River Cup tournament in Moscow. The director of the tournament, Alexander Ostrovsky, explained that her decision was political. People love going to the movies, but making movies is really expensive. And most of the films that play in cinemas around the world are made in Hollywood. Ukraine's government wants to change this and have more Ukrainian-made movies showing in Ukrainian cinemas. And this year, it allocated a record 1 billion hryvnia, which is Ukrainian currency, to support the film industry here in Ukraine. To speak to us about this, we have two experts today. We have Professor Yuri Shuchuk, who teaches at Columbia University and also has set up a film club there where he shows Ukrainian films to various audiences, and Ihor Savichenko, who is a producer of Directory Films in Kyiv, and his latest film, Brahma, just premiered in Kyiv, and it hit the cinemas, the commercial cinemas, this week. And it's one of the films that I believe has received some of this, not the whole billion funding, but part of that billion funding. So thank you both very much for joining us.
Hi, thank you for inviting me.
Yes, hi, hello.
Let's start with the big picture. Why is the Ukrainian government now funding cinema in this large amount? I mean, they've always been funding, but very small amounts. And suddenly, there's a billion hryvnia. Why is this happening, Igor?
So first of all, this funding started in 2011. So this initiative of the government was started in 2010, when from Ministry of Culture was separated the state agency, which is sort of separate from Ministry of Culture institution. And let's say that Ukrainian cinema started to rise, which is, looks unusual, but when Yanukovych was the president. And after this, year by year, it was going down and down. And only this year, it was significantly rised up. But this 1 billion is not exactly, let's say, 1 billion. Half of those money goes in natural way to Ukrainian State Film Agency, which is National Film Body.
So they're subsidizing the state production.
Not exactly subsidizing. Finally, they own the rights.
Mm-hmm.
So due to the new law, which should be implemented till the end of the year, it will be subsidies or grant. But before, it's they own rights for the film. But since New Year, hopefully they will give it as a subsidy. So, and another funding was suddenly appeared on the Ministry of Culture, and it's targeted for, as was mentioned, it was targeted for, let's say, hurray patriotic films, mostly not for patriotic, but exactly it should be extremely patriotic. But in the end, it looks like it's more like for television, TV series and so on, which is not our cup of tea.
So you're saying that this money is designed to sort of promote patriotism through cinema? Is that
what I'm saying? It's not even through cinema. It looks like it's going to be through television. And this 1 billion is separated for two. Half goes to Ukrainian State Film Agency, and half goes to this Ministry of Culture Patriotic Films Program. They don't have other name for this yet. So it's first contest in Ministry of Culture.
And so the way the money is allocated is through sort of competition that you put in a proposal and then it goes through some sort of selection process, or?
They almost copied the system of Ukrainian State Film Agency, but the commission was gathered mostly from television people.
Mm-hmm.
And this for sure stress for results very, very much. So for results mostly are not predictable. And right now we are in the process of the contest. And I think that tomorrow should be announced the results finally. But even in, they have two rounds, two sessions. And even to second session went quite limited amount of really good projects. So they cut it numerous of extremely talented, good projects. Maybe they are not hurray patriotic, but patriotic film, it's very strange definition. I don't know how to define it at all.
Is that how it's defined, or is that just the casual how people call it?
I don't know. So they have very strange definition.
Mm-hmm.
It's quite long. And for example, it's consists, the article, it could be inclusion.
Mm-hmm.
And for example, I applied with a project about Asperger's syndrome.
Mm-hmm.
It's inclusion. And it's a very good project. I mean, very good film should be. It was selected to Torino Film Lab, which one of the best in the world script development project program. So let's say, but for them, it's not patriotic. It's inclusion. It's in the list of their definition what it is, but it is not patriotic.
Huh.
I don't know what is patriotic. So
you're saying there's Jurko, did you want to jump in?
Yes, yes, if I may.
Sure.
In a larger scale of things, the Ukrainian governments, consecutive Ukrainian governments, starting with the independence, were marked from any other post-Soviet government by their peculiar lack of understanding of the importance of national cinema for consolidation of the nation-state building and the entire project of building a new state. And so I think there is a kind of a paradigmatic change in how the government suddenly discovers the value of cinema, national cinema, and how important it is to support it, to finance it. It started this kind of change, started under the old kleptocratic Yanukovych government, and they said that it was because Yanukovych's youngest son was particularly fascinated by cinema. It was a fad for him, and but now under this government, it seems like a kind of conscious policy, and of course it should be welcomed. As far as the so-called the production of quote patriotic films is concerned. What is important is how we talk about this, because American films are very patriotic, a lot of them, in the sense that many of them give the viewer a sense of pride about belonging to what is considered to be American identity. Probably they're not called patriotic, they're called in some kind of a different manner, because today, you know, we speak about the problem with the Ukrainian cinema is that we still do not know what it means to be Ukrainian film, and what it means to be also a film that gives the viewer a sense of pride about being part of this particular culture. And so the moment we problematize this, we say that We need a filmmaking industry that supports our sense of belonging in the Ukrainian nation, in the Ukrainian political project and stuff, and that's okay because that's what many other national cinemas do. The French, Russian, Polish, Ukrainians still. But are kind of uneasy about the very idea of instrumentality of national cinema. It's not only entertainment, but it's entertainment and the identity creation. And so the moment we start talking about, like 12 years ago, around 2002, when this disastrous film, Prayer for Hetman Mazepa, was released, and there were voices saying, well, you wanted Ukrainian national cinema, you have it, this is it. And so it was like discrediting the very notion of Ukrainian national cinema. But there
so,
can
sorry
be...
to interrupt, who's defining what national cinema is? Because you've touched on a very interesting point, and Ihor was talking about this, is like, what is it that's national and how is that interpreted and presented? I mean, is this something that filmmakers are doing? Because you're right. I mean, there's a lot of criticism about what Ihor called the Urava patriotism. So who's supposed to be defining this? I don't know. Ihor, Yuri, what do you think?
I think we still have to kind of start a discussion, a kind of all-encompassing discussion, what it means to be a Ukrainian national film, the way Russians have their national cinema, Poles have their national cinema. For some reason, people find it uneasy to even talk about that. They kind of prefer to avoid the issue. And instead, like, nobody in their right mind would advocate this kind of Soviet type of patriotic cinema. I don't think anybody advocates the necessity of Soviet-conceived patriotic cinema. Patriotism can be very subtle, like the patriotism that is subtle in French or Italian or American cinema. Hollywood is very subtly promoting Americanism and the rest of the world to such an extent that the rest of the world in many senses want to be American.
It's the lifestyle. It's the lifestyle sort of politics that's being transmitted through cinema. You're absolutely right. I wonder if Ihor wanted to come in on this point.
I would like to explain a bit difference, a huge difference in a sense of American and European cinema. So we are Ukrainians, we are mostly in the system of European co-production. And in Europe, there is a definition of national film in each country. And we have European convention about co-production in films. And it's, let's say, quite good to describe it, and it's very easy to understand what it is. So it's, and it's quite different from patriotic what it is. And in Europe, films are supported by states, by public money. We call it soft money. And the reason why such countries like France or Poland or Sweden support their own cinema, they give those money as a grants mostly, because they sort of fill the gap between commercial potential and what film cost. For example, in France, average film costs something like 2.5 million euros. And but from local market is possible if it's art stream, let's say. So art stream is the film which went to big festivals and after this goes to limited theatrical screening. So
who's the target audience there?
The target audience is quite big part of the white audience. In different countries is different. For example, in Sweden it's 34% of the audience. Mm-hmm. It's the audience targeted for festival films. Mm-hmm. So it's big, let's say. But what I mean, if the film can collect from cinemas, from television, from online platforms, let's say 1 million, but it costs 2.5. Mm-hmm. So state fills the gap.
Right.
And it's one point. And another point, why they give those money? They give those money for debuts, for some experimental films, for art house films, to do experiments. And in Ukraine, for example, it's very, very, very important to have experiments because, like Yuri said, we don't have in Ukraine even an idea what is Ukrainian cinema. We have to go to this. We have to find. For example, from my point of view, Brahma Gateway, the film which we did, it's very good start of new wave of Ukrainian cinema. I think we will be copied in different levels, in mass market, in art house market, but this film will be copied. So people will follow
this. Sorry to interrupt here. This is where the film that I was mentioning at the introduction, that Ihor Savchenko is the producer of this film, Brahma, which means gateway. And it is based on a novel by Pavlo Arya, and it's set inside the Chernobyl exclusion zone, because I don't think our listeners will have seen the film. So tell us a little bit about why you chose to make the film, what the film is about, and why it's important for Ukrainian audiences.
It's a long story how this film came.
Well, we only have 15 minutes.
I will not stress attention on this. Let's say that it came mystical somehow. The Volodymyr Tikhy, the director of the film and co-writer, he called me the day after I've seen this theatrical play. It's not a novel, it's a play.
Oh, right.
In theaters. And I've seen this play directed by Stas Zhirkov in Kyiv, which mm-hmm. called Stalkers. And next day I went to Lviv for some conference, and Volodymyr called me when I was passing the dramatic theater in Lviv, and he told me that I would like to do the film based on the theatrical play. You probably don't know this play, but when he named the play, first, I saw it yesterday, and second, I was standing in front of a poster of...
It was coming to Lviv and you saw the poster?
No, it was made in Lviv theater by another director. So it's very popular.
The play was following you, or you were following the play.
Yeah, so it's mystical, let's say. Why it's important, so Pavlo Arya, the writer, the author of the play, very talented guy who somehow, for me, he's sort of Gogol. So Nikolai Gogol, it's one of... most popular, let's say, during the Russian Empire, writer who wrote a lot about Ukrainian ethnic. And it was mixture of horror, humor, and some social issues inside. It was very strange mixture. And if to talk about, let's say, Soviet films, the most popular Soviet films was based on Gogol books like V, horror with humor, with mystic insight and with social issues, like Propala Gramat, I don't know how to mm-hmm. translate it, let's say some missed certificate.
The lost... Thank you.
And another one is the evenings on the village nearby Dikanki, sort of this. And
so this story is based a little bit on...
It's blockbusters. And the play by Arier, it's a postmodernistic mixture of modern myths about Chernobyl. For example, that there is no radiation there. It was invented by Gorbachev just to clear this place because it's sort of base for aliens. And also that they have the secret line of subway from Pripyat, from Chernobyl zone to Kyiv. And lots of other myths which were created by people after Chernobyl disaster. Mixed with typical for this region myths about some magic creations and with very strong social issues based there. And this film goes from comedy to horror. So it was very typical for Gogol. And in our case, it's postmodernistic Gogol. And I think it's very... It should be at least well accepted by Ukrainian audience. Pity the results from cinemas are not very well. But as I said, we did the film. Okay, if we will do this film in 2 years after, for sure it would have much more, let's say, admissions or audience. For the moment, I think we will stop on something like 30,000 viewers in Ukraine.
So this is sort of postmodern Gogol with comedy and terror. It's hit the commercial cinemas in Ukraine this week. So I hope that, well, we'll see how well it does in the cinemas. I'm wondering, do you have plans to show it internationally? And the broader question, what do Ukrainian films have to offer international audiences? Because, Yurko, you were talking about, Ukrainian national cinema. But is this just for Ukrainian audiences, or is there a desire to reach out and show what Ukrainian cinema is to international audiences?
Some of you...
I think, if I may chip in, I think speaking generally of Ukrainian film directors and film producers, they impress me as being a little bit uncertain and unsure of them, of their own capacity to offer something that no other cinema can. And I mean by that specifically Ukrainian stories that will be absolutely fascinating for the rest of the world. Hollywood seems to be kind of fizzling out. They remake old films because they're short on new stories. Ukrainians are sitting on a pile of fascinating stories of their experience that need to be brought out and shown to the world with Ukrainian flavor to them. And by that, I don't mean embroidered shirts and painted Easter eggs.
But I don't think there's any in Brahma, right?
Well, there are some. There are some there too. But I think Ukrainian filmmaking industry needs a little bit of self-assurance that they have an incredible potential of fascinating the rest of the world with their own stories. They need to turn to their own people, to their own sources, and address them head on, aggressively, dig them out and put them in films, instead of trying to copy something from Russian cinema, something from Hollywood, and stuff like that. I think there is a huge untapped potential there.
I totally agree with this, and that's the cinema, that's the films which we do, for example, our company. So we do films with international potential, and for sure we never copy something which was before. So Brahma is very unique for
originality.
Ukraine, and the film which will go to theatrical screening early September, When the Trees Fall, it's also very new film for Ukrainian cinema at all, and it had its premiere in Berlin during Berlin Film Festival, and it went to many other film festivals. It will be very soon in
Toronto,
Yes, it will be in Toronto as well.
We'll see you in Toronto.
It will be in Austin, mm-hmm. Texas, in USA. I have to talk about it. It will go to many other festivals after. So, and it's very, very unique, and it has this. It's somehow it's erotic coming of age. So it has a lot of passion inside, which is very far from very typical for Ukrainians. Is victim style films. Or something like Ukrainian patriot, not patriotic, poetic mm-hmm. wave. So that's what we are trying to do. And year by year, we are more and more welcomed on international level, but unfortunately, only on festivals. Mm-hmm. Unfortunately, sales, so screenings and online platforms and television, they... don't want to take our films pre-buy it. As an example, so 5 years ago we did film Brothers, The Final Confession, which went to Triglav Film Festival. It was very successful. It has very bad release in Ukraine. We were proposed this. It's film based on a very well-known book. It's even bestseller. It was translated to something like 30, 35 languages. It's Torgny Lindgren book, Hummel Honig. And we replaced the story from Sweden to Ukraine, and it was a brilliant film. And even when we proposed it to Swedish television, SVT, they said, no, it's even if it's based on our book, even it's very close to us, so we don't want to screen it. And only after Torgny Lindgren, sorry, but he died, he was quite old, only after this they proposed to screen our film, let's say something like commemoration for the author. So I don't want to look in for reasons like this to screen films in international markets. So what I, and for example, the films about Sinsou, they are very welcome on international market, but only because of topic. So in natural way, for the moment, it's difficult to stress, let's say, commercial market with Ukrainian films.
So
there's one subject matter that absolutely asks for it to be, to become, the subject of films, particular like Ukrainian political life. All the films, Italian films or American films about mafia would pale in comparison with Ukrainian real life stories about Ukrainian political life. If you make a film, a talented film about that, people would be pleading, begging with you to give them more, because the way politics function in this country and all kinds of, real life detective stories happening at the same time is absolutely endlessly fascinating.
Well, you would be facing lots of criminal charges, but everyone wants to come
another,
in on this.
Another issue is the level of industry of in Ukraine and the number of sources we can attach to the film. If to do something like, I don't know, Godfather or any other good examples of crime stories, if to do it good for... So on international market, we will compare it to Hollywood films.
Let's so say, you should do it.
The biggest blockbuster which I did ever, it was the Guide film, which we did eight. I don't remember even how.
Recently,
six
yeah.
years ago. Uh-huh. And it was... it costed $2.2 million, and when we were screening it international, so the production value was something like, people say that okay, but it cost something like 6-8, but we did it for 2.2. But if to do this film on the same level, like I don't know, Pearl Harbor or whatever, so
if you had the financing to do it,
it should
to.
Be 10 times more that we have. So we have quite limited number of sources. It's fast. So
you mean income?
Yes. And right. also on international market, big actors are very welcome to promote the film, to attach the audience to the film. So we cannot pay, I'm sorry, to Bruce Willis or whatever. So it's too expensive for us.
But you can use Ukrainian stars.
But who will go to watch the film with Ukrainian stars somewhere in, I don't know, Illinois?
Well, maybe there are stars of Ukrainian origin that are popular in the United States or Canada.
They cost the same as American stars. So and it's not on it. It's only one, let's say, comparison. But also post production should be on the same level. Mm-hmm. The number of shooting days, the amount of people in crew, because we shoot films with limited crew, with reduced crew, let's say, mm-hmm. so it's twice less. For example, in Ukraine, right after, some several months after we shooted film The Guide, it was shooted film called Bitter Harvest. Mm-hmm. The same topic, everything is the same. But it was shooted by a Canadian director mm-hmm. with Canadian money. Mm-hmm. And our film was 2.2 million, and their film was 15.
So the, one of the challenges you're facing, that was another question I had.
When you see those films, finances. So it's not because we did this film, so but it's really better. But in this American, let's say North American way of production, mm-hmm. the same cost, something like seven times more.
Right,
so. Everything was the same. I mean, the level of post-production, the level of actors. We also had several international cast inside our film. So, but we spent 2.2. North Americans, they spent 15. So...
Because so that's why the Ukrainian government is subsidizing film in order to make it easier for filmmakers in Ukraine.
No, I mean that if Ukrainian government will give me 15, I will do something on the level of Pearl Harbor.
Well, let's hope that you can get that from that 1 billion.
It's not possible, sorry, because I've seen the, let's say, previous results of the contest. It looks like money will go to television.
So you can make a made-for-TV film.
I don't
not interested.
TV for something like 8 years. Let's say it's boring.
Oh, okay.
Ukrainian television is not American television at all. So it's like Yuri said, they follow the ideas from Europe, from, let's say, Poland, who followed the ideas from, I don't know, Germany, who followed the ideas from UK, who followed the ideas from Hollywood. And we have sort of Ukrainian version of True Detective, which went through, let's say, 5 or 6 different adaptations.
But perhaps this is an opportunity to introduce some innovation. If you have ideas, there's money out there.
Then... Our television is not paid TV, so it's terrestrial TV, and there is no opportunity to let's say, make money on TV. And it means that this TV is supported by private investors who use television for political reasons.
But there's always room for change.
No.
There's always room for change. Because I appreciate this. Jurka, you wanted to jump in here?
Yes. I think the problem also is that, I don't know if it's intentionally or even subconsciously, but Ukrainian filmmakers try to emulate the patterns of film production in Hollywood or in Russia. But I think it's more productive to try and adapt or see what's adaptable from Canadian filmmaking experience, because the filmmaking industry and the proportions are comparable where Ukraine and Canada are concerned, not Ukraine and Hollywood. And Canadian film industry is fantastically vibrant, mm-hmm. including production of film series, TV series for television that they export all around the world. And I think Canada can teach so much Ukrainian filmmakers, and I don't think Ukrainian filmmakers appreciate that. What, Ihor, am I wrong in thinking that?
Yes, you are.
Right?
So first of all, the question is in language. And if to compare Canada and USA in this frame, it was the same something like 5 years ago between Ukraine and Russia. We did a lot of films for Russia. We did a lot of series for Russia. So we exported films to Russia because we can do films in Russian. So it's the same with Canada. Canadians, they can do films in English with American accent, with American attached stars. And this is very important. It also, what I mean, we have to be included, and we are in this process into European scheme of production. So the films we do it in co-production with Poland, with Sweden, with France, with Germany, with Macedonia, with Belgium, with Lithuania. That's what we do for the moment. And this gives us much more opportunity because the system of production in Europe is more or less similar in all of those countries. The most wealthy country is France, for example. They have almost 1 billion euros of support from government for films. So much more than Ukraine, for sure. And it's quite comparable system in each of countries. And we have this system of this European Convention, plus we have Eurimage, and Canada is a part of Creative Europe and of Eurimage. And they even have jokes that UK out, Canada in. So Canadians are new Europeans. That's what they say.
Well, we mostly are Europeans in origin.
Yeah, but what I mean, to copy American or Russian style of production, it's not our cup of tea. So
I don't know that he was talking about production. It was about ideas.
And ideas as well.
Right? Because the production, you're right. That's
production as well. But and I didn't mean Canada making films for American market. There is a section of Canadian film that is easily Canadian, immediately recognizable as specifically Canadian. I mean people like... Quebecois film. It's very Canadian, and it's not like the end of the American Empire.
Oh yeah, Denis Arcand and those directors. Yeah,
exactly. Yes, and then people like even people like David Cronenberg. Most of his films are specifically Canadian. You cannot even take them for confuse them for American. Mm-hmm. Probably Canada was not the best example, but I agree. Europe has much more to offer us in the way of how films are made, the entire setup of film production, and also scale-wise. That I agree with you completely on that.
And also cultural diversity, because Europe is very diverse in different style of everything, culture, music, films, way of acting, stories. So in Europe, so what I mean is that in Europe, it's easy to show Ukrainian film, for example, to Germans, either to Swedish people, than to show Ukrainian film to Americans. Even I talked to guys from Netflix. They told that they was very surprised that when they launched this German series, so it's high concept drama, Dark. Mm-hmm. Which is sort of spin-off of Stranger Things, I
yes,
guess.
Yes, I've seen it.
And they said that
criticism, feedback, what?
No, when people called to call center and to ask something. So mm-hmm. let's say this frequently answered question. Yeah. So number one was how to turn on subtitles. So this film, this series showed to Americans that it's possible to watch something not in English.
Of course.
So, and it was number one question, and they were very surprised. And for now, they said we are very open for more European high concept dramas, and they even launched their office in Amsterdam. And they announced that they will give $1 billion for European content for Netflix.
So lots of room for growth for your company, for Ukrainian cinema.
This is an opportunity for us, for sure. This is an opportunity. So international, let's say television, because Netflix is not exactly television. So
it's
online cinema
model.
For mm-hmm. everything. So mm-hmm. let's say for films and also for series. And for us, it's much more interesting opportunity than to try to go to cinemas and to try to push distributors and mm-hmm. Cinemas to take our films.
We could keep talking for hours. This is such a fascinating topic, but we're running out of time, so I'm going to ask if either of you would like to say something, sort of a last comment or anything you'd like to add to the conversation, because we're going to wrap up.
Well, I think we are in the middle of a kind of a shift in paradigm for the better. The kind of slow but certain appreciation of the importance of Ukrainian cinema as a way to express, to kind of speak to the Ukrainian audience, but also to the world. And I think if this tendency continues, we are going eventually and quite soon to have films we can take pride in, both artistically but also commercially.
Thank you. Ihor?
To be honest, I'm not such positive. I see the gap in production during this year because of this fighting between Ukrainian State Film Agency and Ministry of Culture. The financing was stopped. So next year will be gap in theatrical releases for sure, and also on festivals and so on. And this allocated to Ministry of Culture part of money, I don't think that something good will be done based on this concept to do, let's say, patriotic films just because they have to be patriotic. So, but from positive side, what I can say is that big amount of Ukrainian filmmakers are really targeted for international audience for the moment, not just because they would like to go to commercial, let's say, way, just because they understood that this is a way not to copy something, to create something original, but to tell the story to the world. So I hope that after the financing will be renewed again in normal way, so those people will tell their words to the world.
So we've been listening about film from producer Ihor Savchenko, film expert, critic, Professor Yuri Shevchuk from Columbia, two perspectives. I hope our audience will have an opportunity to see this film, the gateway that will be hopefully available internationally in one way or another. I'm Marta Dychok for Hromadske Radio in Kyiv. Thanks for listening. There's a rock band in Novovolensk called Tsviach, which means nail. Here's one of their new songs called Chereveke, Shoes. It's about following your own path. Enjoy.
Покаже шлях, вітер браде в спину штовхав, де довівка моя в синіх хорах, і пройду дорогою у своїх черевиках, зустрічав схід і захід проводжав, і було в кишенях вітер гуляв, я не сумую, де впав там став, і прийшов додому у своїх черевиках. Черевики, полотюки вперті, дохок вітер, і мідні цвяхи здерті. Черевики, лоб, нечистий носить, я йду додому, з мене досить. Я йду додому.
Join us again next week. We'll be speaking about public opinion and attitudes in Ukraine with Professor Alexey Harань, so be sure to tune in. And we'd be happy to receive any feedback from you. Follow us on Twitter. Our handle is @CallingUkraine, or write to us at ukrainecalling@hromadskiradio.org. This is Marta Dychok in Kyiv. Thanks for listening.